Welcome to Cold Tour, the show where we tour the different cultures Pierce's population has to offer and discuss what makes each cultural makeup unique. I'm your host, Chir Nakash. Today is Wednesday, March 22nd, and it is 3:10 p.m., and I'm very excited to welcome Adi Lerner to Cold Tour. Adi is a pre-med student here at Pierce, and we will be exploring Israeli culture together on today's episode. How are you, Adi?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining me. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where were you born?
I was born and raised here in San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. And I went to Welby Way Elementary School, Portola Middle School, El Camino High School. And after that, 5 days after I graduated, I got on a plane and I moved to Israel for 3 years.
So you lived in Israel for 3 years before that? You'd never lived there before?
Never. I mean, once, twice, three times. I've been there when I was young. Went to go visit my family, but it was really just chasing my mom around when she went to go visit her childhood friends, and I didn't really get to experience Israel.
Okay, so were your parents born there, here? How did that work?
So my mom was born there. My dad was born in New York. They met in New York. She was a waitress. He saw her, love at first sight, annoyed her.
Hold on. She was born in Israel, yeah. And he was born here, so how did she get to New York? She moved there, why?
So she moved there just to, I don't know, make money. Make a living.
She decided
experience.
To move there. Was this after the army? After when?
Well, she was 29. She finished the army at 21. She lived in Israel, then she moved to London and worked there for 2 years, then moved back to Israel, and then eventually moved to New York. And that's where they met. And then they got married, and they drove from New York to Los Angeles, and I'd say 3.5 days with their stuff or what they could fit in the car with the dog. And that's it. And they've been in Los Angeles.
Why did they come to Los Angeles? Do you know?
To make enough money to be able to move and to Israel and live there comfortably, because it's more difficult to make money there. But they ended up having one kid, and then a year after that they had my brother, and 3 years after that they had me, and then another
You're
year
the
after
kid.
That. No, they had my sister. She's 27 now, and then they had my brother. He's 26,
mm-hmm.
3 year break, had me, I'm 23, and then my younger brother's 21, almost 22, so that kind of anchored them down, and then they said, you know what, okay, we're going to wait until you guys finish school, and it's been dragging on, but...
To wait for what, to move back to
yeah,
Israel?
Yeah, my mom plans to move back, my dad, I don't know.
Waving back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had... one parent from each hemisphere in the world, different sides, and you told me how they met. If your dad is American, your mom is Israeli, what do you identify as?
When I was younger, before the whole Israel experience, I would just identify myself as Jewish American. And then once I got to 16, 17, and I really identified and connected to the culture of Israel more, then and it became who I was, then I considered myself more Israeli than American.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever say both? Do you say one?
Yeah.
I mean,
like when I tell people I'm Israeli, they know I'm American. They can hear my English. They can hear my manner. They could see my mannerisms, mm-hmm. and they see I'm American.
I mean, you were
the mannerisms here.
You were born and raised here, so
yeah.
It makes total sense. So that kind of leads me to my next question. You're born and raised here in the United States, but you have a very strong tie to Israeli culture. So how did that happen?
So, like I told you, when I was once every 8 years, I'd go to Israel, and it was never really a special experience because I would just go to the beach, grab falafel, go to my mom's family friends' houses, and that's it. But when I was 16, I was finally old enough to explore Israel on my own and take the train to Tel Aviv and do whatever I wanted, and I was old enough to appreciate the culture,
mm-hmm.
and I fell in love, and instead of going back in 8 years, I told my mom, hey, I want to go back next summer. And she said, okay. I went back, and I realized that what I felt last summer wasn't just a honeymoon phase, and it was real. So I started looking into ways that I can move to Israel and live there, and I found a program, Galin Tzibar, that helps people that have the same goal as I did, which was to move there and serve in the IDF. Live together, so it's somewhat of a support system because none of our families came with us. None of our mom's parents, our mom, None of the moms, none of the dads, brothers, sisters, no one came. It was just us.
You moved on your own.
So.
And I do want to get back to that because it's something that I don't think a lot of people who are potentially listening right now know about. But I do want to, let's go back to the first time that you visited Israel. Do you remember how old you were?
16.
You were 16 the first time you went.
Going into 11th grade.
The first time
you went. The summer, yeah.
Okay.
No, the first time, maybe three, and then another time was like 8 or 10.
And 16, you said, was the first time that you explored it on your own.
Yeah.
Okay. Where specifically would you visit before you started exploring on your own? Like, where is your family from?
They're from Parles Chana, which mm-hmm. is in between the middle of Israel and North Israel.
Mm-hmm. Is that area, is it known for anything special? Is it?
No, I mean, Israel's so small, so everyone's been to every place at least once, whether they have a friend there or family there. But,
yeah, for people who don't know, Israel is about the size of New Jersey, and
yeah.
I actually looked this up a while ago, and it can fit in California 13 times. And a lot of people don't realize how tiny that is. Like, you can drive from north to south in, what, 4 hours,
yeah,
5 hours?
I remember I lived in not as south as you can get, but pretty south, and I was stationed on the border of Lebanon, and it would take me only like 5 hours on the bus. 5.5 hours. So that includes all the stops we would make, and that would include waiting for the bus. So it was a very short
to
travel. Northern Israel, the border.
Mm.
But so the point is, Israel's very small.
Very small. When you were younger, I mean, now I'm sure that it's changed because you've lived there, but when you were younger, what was your favorite thing to do in Israel? What was your favorite, like, attraction?
The beach. The sand is soft, like a cloud, and the water is warm. Warmer than the shower.
Absolutely different from here, amazing. Where the water is freezing.
The water, yeah. The water is freezing, the sand. The gravel's bigger, and it's not as nice to lay on.
That attracts the jellyfish, no?
Yeah, wow, the amount of jellyfish stings that I got.
Fun experience. Okay, so you said that you would go there to kind of see family, friends. What did you feel like when you were there? I mean, now I'm sure that when you go back, since you've lived there, it probably feels like home. But at the beginning, do you remember what it felt like? Did you feel like a visitor, a local, an intruder maybe? I don't know.
Not an intruder. I'd say more of a visitor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my mom has 5 brothers. And because my parents had us 4 in such a short amount of time, many of the brothers would come to LA and live with us for maybe a month, 2 months, sometimes 6 months, and they would help raise us. So they're all like fathers, and I have no other family except for my immediate family in Los Angeles. So going to Israel was kind of like seeing my other dads.
Your other dads.
It would just be visiting and nothing else. We'd get to the place or to whatever house we were visiting. My mom would have coffee with whoever she's having coffee with, and I would just run around outside. And
with the cousins, with the friends.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of family living there. You said your mom has 5 brothers, 4 brothers?
5 brothers.
Wow, that's crazy. And
she's the oldest.
Yeah. Wow. And your dad has how many siblings?
3.
Okay.
Brother and 2 sisters.
And each of them have kids of their own? And
only the brother.
On your dad's side?
On my dad's side, only the brother, and he has maybe 5 kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Still, it's a big family. I mean, yeah. It adds up. You have 6 people with more than 1 kid. That's already 7 cousins that you have, you know. Okay. So Israelis typically have really big families. And I know that it's rare to, like, find an Israeli family with an only child. But did you like, I mean, growing up here, that's something pretty common, is you find, you know, most Americans have a core unit of, like, 4 people in their immediate family. Did you find that discrepancy with, like, you know, friends that you had growing up as an Israeli-American? Was it ever like, oh my God, you have such a huge family, such a this?
No, not really. I can say that having 3 siblings or 4 kids in the family was a huge change in my childhood. And I see that it builds this warmth in a house that you have 3 lifelong best friends plus your parents, which for me are my best friends. And it just, maybe, I don't know why Israeli families have a lot of kids, but it builds a type of family that is fun.
So in addition to you having a lot of siblings, you guys are also very close. That's nice. That's close in age too, right?
Yeah.
That's good. So do you think Israeli culture is family oriented?
Most definitely.
How so? Like, what does that mean?
How to explain this? I don't know. I just, not even within the family, like, not that families are usually tend to be big, but within family to family, mm-hmm. people that aren't related, people that are just friends, it feels like they're family. They are quick to, like, when I went to Israel mm-hmm. and I didn't have any family. I mean, I do have family, but I was in the army and I didn't live with them. People would open their houses to me, invite me over for dinner. If there was a holiday, they would ask me, and it got to the point where they annoyed me, saying, "Are you sure you don't need a place to stay? Are you sure you don't need a place to have dinner? Are you sure you don't this, that?" And
so they're big on looking out for you, even if you're not related by blood.
Yeah. And when there was a war in 2014, the summer, I witnessed all of Israel come together. All of Israel. It doesn't matter if they're left wing, right wing, religious, non-religious, man, woman, Arab.
What do you mean? How
Arab.
Did you see them come together? What?
That many hundreds and hundreds of families that were living in the south that were under the threat of bombs and missiles, they needed a place to go. And so they went up north, and people from the north would open up their houses to people they've never even met, to families of 5, 4, 6, 7, I don't know how many. And there would be people waiting in the grocery markets collecting money to buy, like, things to mm-hmm. give. It's just, the list goes on and on, but to the
generosity and just
the
kind
generosity
of
and the love that everyone shared.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm sure that was kind of
indescribable.
I'm sure it was exciting to see, as somebody who was also a lone soldier, you know, someone who didn't have a family there, an immediate family to look out for you. And so, as somebody who that kind of leads me to the next question I have, which is, you grew up with both American culture and Israeli culture prevalent in your life. And so, what would you say is one of the biggest differences in the cultures? And this can be, you know, noise level, political correctness, you know, personal space bubble, whatever it is that you see is the most glaring difference, or one of the most glaring differences.
In the Israeli culture, they're much more straightforward. They're also very loud. So straightforward that sometimes many times it comes off as rude.
Tactless.
tactless, yeah. And Americans are much more polite, and I feel like America is much more organized.
Organized.
Israeli, the bureaucracy there, when I moved there, was horrible. Mm-hmm. If it was dealing with the banks or my phone or anything, it was a nightmare. But the straightforwardness is probably the biggest difference for me. And
do you have an example, like a personal story of someone who said something or did something? Or so maybe you did something and you adopted that straightforwardness while you were there?
I've always been pretty straightforward, but once I got to Israel, I felt like it was normal. I didn't feel like I stood out.
You didn't feel like you were being rude anymore?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Because everybody was doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know that one of the biggest cultural differences is serving in the army, and I know that we kind of touched on that. It's an optional thing here, whereas in Israel, everyone's required by law to serve in the Israeli Defense Forces once they turn 18. So you volunteered to serve as a lone soldier in the IDF. Can you tell our listeners what that means? What's a lone soldier?
Lone soldier is someone that doesn't have the support of their parents. And it's more on a financial basis. Like, my parents supported me mentally and conceptually, and idealistically, to join, even though they worried a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was a lone soldier, but they couldn't support me financially, so I was a lone soldier. But there are people in Israel that are Israeli, born and raised there, never lived anywhere else. But they're very, very religious, and for whatever reasons, they don't think that they should join the army. So the parents are against it and kicked them out of the house. So they're also considered a lone soldier.
Why did you decide to join and serve? I mean, it's one thing loving the country and another to, you know, to take such a big move and do that.
I mean, the Holocaust gives me 6 million reasons.
Okay.
I mean, 6 million people, Jews, but many more, 11 million people, if I consider the gays and the gypsies and others, were slaughtered simply because they didn't have their own state and they didn't have their own army. And now that they do, I just don't see how I couldn't serve. My whole dad's side of the family was completely wiped out. Only my grandfather lived.
Your dad's side of the family is Polish?
Yeah, they're 100% Polish, and my mom's is 100% Yemenite. And aside from that reason, I mean, why not? Because of money, because of school. I can get money, and I can study anywhere, anytime, no matter what age I am. And this is an experience, even if it doesn't come from the reasons that I mentioned with the Holocaust, simply investing in yourself. I see the tools that I gained mentally and physically are things that are going to carry out and have carried out, and I feel it now while I'm in school. And when I traveled in South America by myself for 3 months and then eventually someone joined me, but I just, everything in my life is so much easier now because of the hardships that I went through in that experience. Mm-hmm. And I see it as an investment in yourself, and that's a lifelong investment rather than investing in, I don't know.
Was it something that, you know, your older siblings did? Is it something your parents planted in your head? How did you come to that? Because it's one thing to know that it exists and another to take the actual step forward and say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to move to the other side of the world and I'm going to spend, you know, 3 years, right? That's the minimum for
two and a half years
of my life dedicated to something, but I'm not even physically a part of, you didn't grow up with it around you. So who planted the idea in your head?
You know, sometimes you can go to Israel and see that there are Israelis that look at me and say, why would you come here and why would you join and what's wrong with you? And they actually gave me a nickname throughout my whole service, and it was called Freier, which means like a sucker. And they call me a sucker because they say you could have been in college and enjoying yourself and building your future. Instead, you're here.
Because for them, it's mandatory, and you're doing something which they, not necessarily, but it may be if they didn't have to, they wouldn't be there.
And I think that is because I come from the outside. And it's that general idea that when there's a situation, good or bad, and you're someone looking from the outside, mm-hmm, of that bubble, then you can really see it for what it is. And I don't know, I just felt that I saw it for such a great thing. And mm-hmm.
So you don't regret going at all?
I definitely don't regret going, and I wish I could do it again.
Okay. What did you do in the Army?
I was a paratrooper in Tzankanim.
So for 2.5 years you did that, or were you there for longer?
No, so in 2.5 years I was in that unit, but the training is split up into three, but it's over a course of a year. Mm-hmm. And after a year, then you're an active duty combat soldier, and they place you in different parts of Israel along the border, and every so often you go back to training, and then you go back to another border. And so,
I mean, it was a very long and meaningful experience that you had. So why did you come back here afterwards? Did you always plan to come back here?
I ask myself that every day because my heart is still in Israel. Mm-hmm. And aside from my family being here, my immediate family, my sister's in Israel. She's studying medicine there. But my two brothers are here. My mom and my dad are here. And I came back for school. I started school here already, and I could have gotten a free education there, a great education, but with the way their school system is set up and the hurdles that I'd have to jump over and the language barrier, because I went to Israel without any Hebrew, and I do speak Hebrew now, and I can read and I can write, but it's different. It's everyday Hebrew. It's not university-level Hebrew.
Right, and uneducational. It's the same way that if you would give somebody, you know, a scholarly article to read versus if you would speak to them in English.
Exactly.
The level is different. So where would you have learned? There are options to learn in English in Israel, but did you not want that?
Well, if you want to learn in English, there's only specific degrees that you can learn in English, mm-hmm, and I was also juggling between computer engineering and medicine, mm-hmm, and in Israel you don't have that choice. You choose one and you stick with it. And here you can go to Pierce and you can do GEs and you can taste a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you can decide.
You're trying it out. You're seeing which direction you want. Yeah, I'm testing the water.
So right now I'm...
Which direction you want to go in.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So another huge difference, and you kind of touched on this, and it's easy to point out too, is the language. You said you didn't grow up speaking Hebrew?
Yeah.
You spoke English.
Exactly. My mom would sometimes get angry, and she'd scream at me in Hebrew, but other than that, I didn't.
Does your dad speak Hebrew?
He does, but he doesn't. He was religious, so he read the Torah, and he studied the religion, and that was in Hebrew. So he can read and he can write, but he has a very, very, very thick accent, and he doesn't feel comfortable speaking Hebrew.
Okay. So your parents weren't both fluent, which is hard. That's hard to maintain a language that isn't something that you're constantly surrounded with. But is there a word or a phrase that you know in Hebrew that doesn't have a direct translation into English? It can be slang if that's easier.
There's so many.
Pick one. Just try to explain it
to me. All right. There's Habibi, which is actually Arabic that everybody in Israel uses, which means like bro or brother or my friend. The straight translation is, I think, my friend. And then there is Yala, which is also Arabic, which means like, come on, hurry. Or it can, I don't just be like, hey, what's up? What are you doing? Ah, nothing. I'm going to go to the library. Tov, yala. Or like, okay, yala, bye. And I don't know. It's
has multiple meanings.
So many meanings.
So I know that another thing that is special about Israel is all the different holidays that we celebrate there. And they're not, you know, a lot of Israelis aren't necessarily Jewish, but a lot of the holidays that we celebrate are Jewish. Which Israeli holiday do you enjoy celebrating the most?
I don't know. I think that I enjoy them all equally simply because all the holidays are very family oriented, and family time is a great time for me. But I'd say the one that I take most from every year, no matter... The one that I take most from every year is probably Yom Kippur, which you basically ask for forgiveness for the sins that you've committed. And I see that as a time to reflect and to look back on the bad things that I've done and correct them and adjust a couple screws in my brain. And
what's special about it? I mean, I know that here, Yom Kippur is also a day of fasting, right? So
yes.
It's 24 hours, and that's what people focus on here. The 24 hours where you can't eat, can't drink, can't use electricity. But in Israel, it's a little bit different. So can you tell me what's special about that?
Well, many, many, many holidays I experienced in the army. So no matter what, whether it's a holiday or not, you still have to do what we have to do. But when I wasn't in the army, it was a countrywide feeling. If it was Yom Kippur or some other holiday that, you know, shops close and people can't use electricity, you won't see any cars on the freeway. You won't see any car, anybody driving, nothing. Everything's closed. Everybody's in their home. And
it's like the country stops.
Exactly. It's very special.
So you picked a holiday that doesn't have any food, but what's your favorite Israeli food? I know it's hard.
I'd say at the moment, shawarma.
Shawarma.
Shawarma belafa.
All right.
Which is like, I think lamb, and I don't know how to describe it. I don't know how to translate it.
Chicken.
But it's really good.
Yeah, on a spit, and you kind of wrap it up.
Yeah.
Love shawarma. If you want good shawarma, you can go to Tel Aviv
Grill
over
on
here.
On Ventura.
Yeah, the best. Okay, so we're almost out of time. So I have two more questions I want to ask to wrap up. So the first thing is, what's one thing that makes you consistently proud of your Israeli culture?
Israel. What comes out of Israel, the technology and the agriculture, the advancements in agriculture and technology and medicine that that they have, despite that it's not very publicized, but per capita they have the most or more than any other country in the world. And that in itself makes me proud. And just to meet every Israeli and to see, I mean, I can't generalize and say every Israeli is a perfect person, but there's definitely a special quality in most Israelis that I see that I love it. And I'm very proud to say that they come from the same culture and this is what our culture represents.
So tell me one thing you think most people don't know about Israeli culture that you think maybe they ought to know.
That it's like New York. You go there and you'll see every type of person from every background, whether it be from Argentina or America or Canada or Russia or Australia or Brazil, anywhere.
So it's a big melting pot of different people. Great. So unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much, Adi, for joining our program.
Thank you.
Tune in next week to tour a different culture that exists right here as part of Pierce's campus. Thank you for listening to Cold Tour from KPCRadio.com. I'm Shirin Akash.